The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now it's time for the debrief. We're going to take a look back on the week that was and also a little look ahead to the weekend. And this week I'm joined by Mick Clifford from The Examiner. Comedian Judy Jay is here and freelance journalist Niamh O'Reilly, who is settling herself there as we speak. You're all very welcome to the programme. I want to start with a story that we covered on the programme here. This is Rex Ryan's play about Jerry Hutch, the monk, because people were really surprised when Jerry Hutch appeared on stage at the opening night. Mick, we had an account of it here on the programme. People will have heard a lot about it. So I think you could say this is art. It's a commentary on his life. But then when he appeared on stage himself, things started to change. Do you think that's a fair assessment of it?
I think it's very fair, Claire. As you say, look, his life is absolutely material, if you want to put it that way, for a play, for art, anything like that. His involvement in it turns it into something very different. For example, would he be any way involved if there were elements to that play that he objected to? And the nature of his life has been such that there would have to be large chunks of it, if I could put it this way, that objectively you might object to. And quite obviously that wasn't the case. And it turns then into something approaching propaganda. You throw in the fact that he's still saying, though we'll have to wait and see whether he does, that he's going to stand in the Dublin Central by-election. And his availability to the media for this thing is one thing. Let's see, is he going to be available for to the media in the campaign for the by-election if he runs? I personally believe he won't be available at all. Mm-hmm. So overall, the whole thing, it's something I'd be turned off.
Well, I know he wasn't keen on answering questions about politics or about his potential run at that opening night. But I haven't seen the play, but what I heard about it is that there are parts of that play that are uncomfortable for Jerry Hutch, you know, that it's not all complimentary. But you say none of that matters if he is so much part of it that he's willing to be on stage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can have a scenario where some of it is uncomfortable, but overall, is it a reflection of the man's life, his career, so-called, or whatever? To put it another way, you know, the guy, and I said this before, if he'd been somebody like him, his intelligence, his wherewithal, whatever, if he'd been born in a salubrious suburb of Dublin, the south side or wherever, he could very well have ended up a high court judge. But he wasn't. He was born there. But huge numbers of people came out of the same scenario as him, and they didn't turn to, as we say, the Special Criminal Court suggested he was head of a crime family, mm-hmm. so to speak, crime organisation. They didn't go that way. And overall, if you're going to do something like that, you need to be completely removed and do it in this way. Just to give you a quick example, there was a number of plays, for instance, around the life of Charlie High.
Yeah.
Now, he had no input into them. And I would imagine he was far more perturbed with how he was portrayed in that than, for example, as we've seen with Jerry Hutch in this.
Judy, what do you think? Art or propaganda?
Well, first of all, this whole thing, the one bit that I did find amusing was just hearing so many people were at a play in the first place, because this might be controversial as a comedian, but I'm not a massive theatre head. The last time I went to the theatre, it came to the interval and I said, thank God that's over. And somebody said, no, there's another half. I said, what? So I was just so surprised to see so many people there. I mean, the thing with Jerry Hutch is ultimately, look, obviously, he has definitely done some terrible things in his time, you know, for sure. But I suppose nobody's kind of asking themselves, when faced with the moral quandary, nobody's saying, what would Jerry Hutch do? You know, he's not kind of held up as this kind of pillar of, you know, a moral compass. But ultimately, whether you like it or not, he's interesting. And that's why people will go to this play, because he's an interesting guy and it's an interesting story.
But the controversy arises when someone is saying, I'm going to run for election, a Democratic election. And are they using that stage as a platform? I think that's where the discomfort is.
Yeah, he probably is.
Niamh, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Mick hit on a good point. Like, I highly doubt he's going to be available for press interviews or being asked about his policies or anything like that if he is going to run. So this was the perfect way for him to get publicity without having to do any of that. And I don't know why anyone was surprised that some kind of stunt, you know, occurred. Of course, something, he was going to be on stage or he was going to be there or something to grab the headlines. And we're all talking about it and we're all giving him oxygen. And I think that's completely the opposite thing that we should be doing, because as Mick said, he's not going to be probably doing debates or making himself available if he does decide to run, and answering the hard questions that people, you know, constituents might want to ask him.
We'll stick with you, Niamh, on the issue of pepper spray as well. That was something else that we were talking about on the programme. We had Lucy Michaels on. This is UN rapporteurs who are observers, and they criticise the use of double strength pepper spray, as they say, by the Gardaí to control largely peaceful protests. That was their characterisation of what they saw. Do you think the guards need to have more armoury than they currently have? They police by consent?
Yeah, I think this is quite like a sad one in some ways, because in the past you have this dreamy notion of the guards not being armed and, you know, Tuil Ireland and policing by consent. But I think the world has changed completely, and I wouldn't be a guard for all of the money in the world. It's an extremely difficult job now, and the things that they are faced with are just completely different, I think, to what the job was, you know, many moons ago, when they didn't need, you know, any sort of weapons or anything like that to sort of defend themselves. But having said that, I don't know whether double strength pepper spray is required. I would question the need for that. Is the old single strength not enough if you're spraying somebody in the face? I would imagine it's not a pleasant experience.
Well, we'd Pat Murray on the programme, former member of the Guards. He said that the old stuff didn't work, Mick.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, in context too, in terms of this double strength pepper spray, as I understand, was brought in after the Dublin riots,
which was
a shock to the whole country, not to mind them, Gary Shikhan. And remember, some of their individual members, what they were subjected to in the course of that was horrendous. The other thing is the protest that was highlighted in the report in terms of Eastwano was pointed out that twice during that protest, the protesters attempted to breach a wall that was a human wall that was there by the Gardaí, which, you know, you could say is being provocative as well. But tasers were brought in late last year. They've been used twice already. That's, you wonder, is that necessary? And again, the double pepper spray. Okay, I understand the shock of the Dublin riots, but that was not your average protest or something. So I'd be a bit concerned that that's a bit much.
Well, Lucy Michaels, who was on with us, said that no member of the Oireachtas questioned whether this spray should be used. But I think in the context of the Dublin riots, maybe in that moment, people weren't willing to question whether the Gardaí needed more defences.
Absolutely. And let's face it, it is a tough job. And in the last number of years, going back since COVID, this idea of protests have become tougher for them. But at the same time, you know, there has to be some limits. And it would seem, and certainly the rapporteur believes it, that this is going a bit further than is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Another topic that we had on the programme was whether we should all dress up now, get back into the suits for work. Julie, what do you think?
Well, I mean, for the line of work I'm in, I know they say dress for the job you want, but I actually went back teaching during the day, and the job I really want is a showgirl. And I know if I turned up in the sequins, I'd be getting some looks as a secondary teacher during the day. So I think there's an element of, like, you know, you probably should make some bit of an effort, I feel, with work. Not even for other people, but just for yourself. You know, I know now, as the mother of two small children, generally speaking, I arrive into work and I'm covered in yogurt stains. I mean, if there's only one yogurt stain, it's a good day. But in saying that, I wouldn't go full on in a work situation, casual Friday, you know, Mick Wallace, Dáil Éireann, the early days. Like, we want to make some erupt. We want to make some effort here. But I think it's more for you. Like, I always feel when I'm dressed up a bit, I feel a bit more on the ball. In saying that, I'm not turning up for a gig in a Deb's dress and an up style for a free pizza slice and, you know, a drinks token at the end of the night. So it depends on the context. But I do think making a little bit of effort makes you feel better.
Well, Ali Ryan, who runs Goss.ie, said that when she sees somebody, if she has a meeting with somebody on a Zoom, for example, and they're wearing a hoodie, that it just drives her mad. She just thinks
really?
It's like a
market.
Sorry, Mick.
He's in a hoodie.
Mick has given up. Okay. So Ali's reaching for the pepper spray.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Poor Mick.
Poor old Mick.
Do you ever not wear a hoodie, Mick?
Well, actually, I work from home and I wear a dress suit every day, and I colour code my dicky bows from Monday to Friday.
So you have no issue with Dress Down Friday every day?
No. To be frank, I don't. Perhaps I should. I do appreciate that once in the blue moon I get out of the trackies and I get into something, and you do feel a bit refreshed and the whole thing, especially when you have to go out and meet people and that sort of thing. It does remind me, though, of my story. When my grandmother died in 1978, at the wake, one individual turned up in a tracksuit. which was quite unheard of then, that individual was Mick O'Dwyer. And he was actually coming from training to Kerry.
I remember you telling that story.
I thought you were going to say that individual was Mick Wallace. I was like, what? From Wexford?
But he was a man before his time. Wow. They're all wearing trackies
now. See, nobody would bat an eye at Mick, I'm sure, turning
up. That's the point. Yeah.
Very few other people would have gotten away with that.
Oh, no way. I mean, you know, they'd have been shunted out of the place. No question in the world about that. But how times change.
You know this theory that it's the tech bros who want to instill this view that work and home life, it's all the one now. Mm. So you can wear your casual wear to work because they just want us on all the time.
Yeah.
Niamh, do you subscribe to that
view? I definitely do. I mean, I think back to the scene in The Social Network where Mark Zuckerberg was running around in his little sliders the whole time.
Yes.
But look, I am a freelance writer who works from home and have done so for many years. So like my life is trackies and hoodies and all of this sort of thing. But I like Julie said, if I'm going out to, you know, meet someone or a work gig or whatever, I will get out of the trackies and I will put on something more for myself,
yes,
I think, than anyone else, because you do feel put together. You do feel like you've made an effort. And I do think it changes your form from being at home into kind of, you know, work gear, and it changes kind of your mindset and stuff. And also it's just nice to get away from, as Julie said, you know, the old yogurt stains in the hair and all that sort of stuff when you have two kids running around. And it's just refreshing. Like, even coming out this morning, it's midterm, so the kids were running around trying to get yourself put together while you have two little boys, you know, talking about this, that and the other, is no mean feat. But it feels good to do it, I think, to kind of dress for yourself, you know.
Julie, what's the dress code for teachers these days?
Oh, I think it's gone far more casual. It has, really. I mean, I think like when I started teaching, you couldn't wear jeans now. Yeah, when I started teaching
allowed.
In medieval ages. Well, I wouldn't say it wasn't explicit, but it was just kind of implicit. Whereas now I feel it is quite casual. I mean, no doubt it probably depends on the school.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel it is a little bit casual. And again, for me, I'm probably guilty of that. I kind of enforce casual Friday every day. Nobody told me there was a casual Friday policy, but I've just always lived my life presuming there was. But I think it is more casual than it used to be.
Yeah, because when I was in school, the teachers were always dressed like they've just been to shows almost nationwide.
But they were everywhere. They were in any office environment. Yeah. And I'd wager if you went into an office environment now, you wouldn't see people in there with shirts and ties and in suits, whatever, like that, to the extent at all. Right across society, I'd
maybe
say.
It's the nature of the work, though, isn't it? Because if you are sitting at a computer all day, you're not going to be comfortable, are you, in a suit and tie?
Absolutely not. I think it's a form of torture making someone sit there in like a suit if you're literally at a desk all day. But having said that, I don't know whether, you know, you want to go, you know, into the Wayne Etta slob side of things either. I think there's a balance to be had. But I think enforcing people to sit in suits when you're not leaving the office is a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've news about Ben Lynch, who has become the first Irish skier to ever make any final in the Winter Olympics. Isn't that great news?
Wow.
Fair play.
He's made the men's half pipe final, whatever that is. What is a half pipe final? This is all news to me.
I wonder, is there any other country that has somebody at that level where they've never had snow?
I don't know. Mick, we'll have to find out. But in the meantime,
we haven't in this country. I'm sure this man hasn't.
No, we'll have to find out where he trains and who he is and all of that. But that'll all emerge over the weekend. Congratulations to Ben, though. Great news for Ireland. I assume everyone's going to watch the match at the weekend.
Yes. Definitely. Sort of behind a cushion, but yes.
Yeah, the nerves are up, aren't they? You've got Kerry to watch.
I'm going to Croke Park, big match
there. Oh, are you?
Oh, yeah. But I know the rugby's on earlier, so I'll be able to catch that as well. But it sounds like it could be ominous, to be honest with you.
The rugby?
Yeah.
Yeah, not for Kerry against Dublin.
Well, I wouldn't be getting too excited this time of year yet, you know?
Listen, this is the time as well when we talk about weekend plans, and because of the weather, we want to focus on TV and streaming and movies. Anything on the agenda?
I can't wait to start How to Get to Heaven?
From Belfast.
Oh, yes. I can't wait. I haven't seen it. I have it queued up and I want to binge it. So I can't wait. It's meant to be really good.
It
and
is.
I absolutely love Derry Girls.
Anything by me.
She's just terrific. Yeah. The sense of humour. I just love it. And I almost feel like I get the sense that this might be if the Derry Girls grew up in sort of a way, there's that kind of, you know, sense of humour and that kind of characterisation there. So I can't wait just for something light and something funny. But I will recommend, if anyone hasn't watched it and they are a millennial like myself, The America's Next Top Model.
Oh, yes. This is what I'm finishing this weekend. Oh, have you finished it?
I finished it, but I'd watch it again. It was, my jaw was on the floor.
This is the documentary.
Yeah, exactly. How did we live through this?
Yeah, I will watch this. I've seen some clips online. It looks great, but it looks very grim.
I'm finishing it this weekend, and it's a grim watch. Really is.
What's stranger is that, like, we watched this as young women and saw nothing wrong with it.
So I know.
Is it called America's Next Top Model?
Reality Check. Top Model, yeah.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, you're kind of looking at it as a terrifying historical document, and then you're remembering, I loved this show at the time.
It was appointment viewing. Yeah. You sat down and you watched it, and you saw nothing wrong with, you know, girls who were perfectly healthy, beautiful figures being told they were fat, they were overweight, they had to lose weight, they had to do this, they had to do that. And
it was sadistic.
The makeovers were almost, they used to do these like extreme makeovers to the contestants, but they would do things almost to deliberately upset them, to provoke drama, you know, for the show. They'd shave their heads, you know, they would aggressively dye their hair when they didn't want it dyed, things like that.
They did that makeover where they swapped ethnicities.
I mean, so just they turned.
And not so long ago, like crazy stuff. Yeah, it is. It's a grim watch. I'll definitely be finishing that this weekend.
Yeah. Okay, so that is what we saw on screen in America's Next Top Model. It's not even I know you'll have stuff in there that we didn't see, but really it's an examination of what we found enjoyable as well.
Yeah, and just that aired. Kind of toxic culture at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, so it's a tough watch, but I'll definitely finish that one this weekend.
Okay, so that's on your agenda. And then we have How to Get to Heaven from Belfast and The Match, back-to-back matches.
Yeah, and Dancing with the Stars, I'll be perfectly honest now. And I'm in as long as Paddy's in.
You should be honest.
You should do it.
Yes.
For Mick for next year.
100%.
Should or will. Are you listening?
I'm vicariously living
Mick,
through Paddy.
Mick, you asked us to bring that up before we came in here.
Have you got a sparkly shirt on underneath the hoodie there? I think he does.
It is a great one. It's a great family watch, though. We do it as well in our house.
That's for sure.
That's it. And, you know, it's also, and I say this with the greatest, I think Paddy's a huge addition to it, but it's also fascinating as to, how do you put this nicely, who gets in on merit and who may not be voted in on merit, that kind of thing. Yeah. So I find it fascinating from that point of view.
You're saying Paddy can't dance, is that what you're saying?
I'm absolutely saying nothing of the sort.
We have some breaking news. Enoch Burke has been returned to jail today, and the hearing which facilitated that return to jail was suspended. Chaotic scenes, as we understand, in the High Court. We'll have more in the news with Eamon in a couple of minutes. That's an unsolvable problem, Mick, isn't it?
Completely. And, you know, it's solvable, but it doesn't seem like it's solvable from the point of view of the Burkes if they decide they want to solve it. But, I mean, where do you go with it? I mean, it's way beyond anybody and their principles, anything like that. It's way beyond anything like that.
Okay, listen, we will leave it there. Thank you very much to Mick Clifford and to Niamh O'Reilly and to Julie J. We look forward to seeing Mick on next season's Dancing with the Stars. No, we will. We're going to make it happen. We've all decided this, and we've said it on national radio.
It has to happen.
The stars. Yeah. You brought it up, Mick. You've only yourself to blame. My thanks to all of you for getting in touch with us on the show today. If you've missed anything, you can catch up on newstalk.com or on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. My team today, Cormac McDonough on sound, producers Dee King, Helena O'Toole and Alex Russo, with research by David O'Connor, and our broadcast assistant is Anne-Marie Kane. Our editor is Denise McNamara.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on Newstalk. Conversation that counts.